Good morning, and thank you for joining Hiscox's Q1 2022 trading update. I'm Liz Breeze, the Group Interim CFO, and I'm joined here by Jo Musselle, the Group CUO. Unfortunately, Aki Hussain, the Group CEO, is unable to join us today due to a sudden close family bereavement. He will return to the office in the next couple of days, so if you would like to have a follow-up discussion with him, this of course can be arranged. I will start with a few brief opening remarks, focusing on three key topics: growth trends, loss experience, and investment results. Then we will open the floor for Q&A. Let me start with a few comments on trading momentum. It is very pleasing to see that the group delivered a double-digit growth of 11.8% in constant currency in the first quarter. Key drivers of the growth have been the continuing improved momentum in retail, especially in DPD, strong growth in the FloodPlus platform, and significant inflows of AUM into our ILS funds. The strong momentum is moderated at headline level by ongoing portfolio optimization initiatives to improve risk-adjusted returns and consistency. I'll provide a bit more color on this later. The rate momentum has been favorable across all business units, and we expect this trend to sustain as the year progresses. Now beginning with a bit more detail on retail. This division grew 4% in constant currency to 670 million. The headline growth rate includes the impact of ongoing activity to reshape the U.S. broker portfolio towards smaller ticket business. Excluding this, the underlying retail business portfolio momentum is improving with a growth of 7.6% in constant currency, showing really good progress towards the middle of the 5%-15% range. The course correction actions will largely conclude in Q2, and we expect the U.S. broker channel business to return to growth in the second half, supported by continued rate tailwind. With a focus on small, micro, and nano businesses, our group digital partnerships and direct business, or DPD as we tend to call it, grew gross premiums written by just under 10% in constant currency. This is a good result as we have deliberately slowed down our new business growth in U.S. DPD while we embed and optimize our new digital trading platform as previously guided. This short-term pain for new technology, which will provide agility and scalability commensurate with our growth aspirations. Despite this, U.S. DPD remains on track to achieve 15%-20% top line growth in 2022. As we move through the second half of this year and the IT platform replacement materially complete, we will start marketing more assertively, take advantage of our expanded product footprint, and bring on a healthy pipeline of new digital partnerships that we've already lined up. We're continuing to see positive momentum on retail underwriting profitability, and the business remains on track to return to the 90%-95% combined ratio in 2023. This is the combined effect of good progress in operational changes, portfolio remediation, and a supportive rate environment. Now moving to our Hiscox Re and ILS business. Gross premium written has grown by 45.8% to 421 million. Our ILS platform has continued the strong growth seen last year, with the team adding another $200 million into our ILS platform on top of the $190 million that we announced that we raised last year. This AUM increase has enabled us to grow into favorable market conditions in North American catastrophe and retrocession. Following net inflows of 157 million over the last 12 months, the AUM now stands at 1.6 billion, providing a tailwind to increasing fee income. Net premiums written of Re and ILS grew 20.5% at a slower rate than the top line. As we go through this year, you should expect this trend to continue now that we have achieved a better balanced portfolio. The London market growth is somewhat disguised by the impact of re-underwriting actions we've been undertaking to drive better portfolio profitability. Just to give you an idea of its magnitude, our reduced appetite for underpriced natural catastrophe risk in London market has taken just under 7 percentage points off growth in Q1, impacting both our property binder and major property portfolios. As you may recall, we have been re-underwriting our property binder for over 3 years now, and this still doesn't appear to be sufficient to achieve genuine rate adequacy, particularly as our view of cat risk has been evolving. The effect of these re-underwriting actions is skewed towards the start of the year due to the timing of when this business is renewed, So the impact will be less prominent as the year goes by. Another approximate 3 percentage points of growth was eroded following our decision to tighten cyber risk and due to the impact of Russian sanctions. Despite this, net premium written grew 5.5%, significantly ahead of the top line momentum. As we are focusing on growth in profitable areas, we are comfortable ceding less to reinsurance to benefit from a strong rating environment and should expect this gross net dynamic trend to continue through the year. In line with our strategy, the portfolio we are writing is balanced, rate adequate, and with healthy margins and good growth in areas we are keen to grow. For example, we are seeing good growth in D&O, benefiting from over 250% of cumulative rate increases over the last 5 years, and in flood, despite the NFIP's rates becoming more competitive, and we are making further enhancements to the Flood Plus digital platform, which will further improve pricing adequacy, speed and resilience. The rating environment surpassed our expectations as we achieved an average rate increase of 8% in the first quarter. We expect the momentum to sustain through the rest of this year, supported by the impact of Ukraine losses in the affected classes, particularly terrorism. I'm now going to move to our loss experience. I'm really pleased to report that excluding the impact of the conflict in Ukraine, all business units have had a good start to the year with a better than expected non-catastrophe loss performance, driven by the strong rate momentum and the remediation actions that we've undertaken over recent years. Q1 has seen a number of natural catastrophes occur around the world, including European storms, floods in Australia, and an earthquake in Japan. The total net loss reserved for these events is within our first quarter natural catastrophe budget, and there's been no outsized losses. The tragic events in Ukraine have been another serious test for the P&C sector. While the losses incurred in Q1 have been minimal, the group has reserved circa $40 million net of reinsurance, mainly in Hiscox's London Market division, with a smaller impact for Re and ILS. We believe our estimate is robust. Hiscox's London Market exited the aviation hull business in 2018 and political risk business in 2017, the lines in which the insurance industry is facing the most significant uncertainty. The majority of our exposure is in the political violence, war and terrorism book, which provides physical damage cover and ensuring business interruption coverage to multinational companies that have fixed physical assets such as office buildings or manufacturing plants in Ukraine. Our coverage designed to respond to events such as the current conflict in Ukraine and has indeed responded where damage has occurred. While the conflict is ongoing and the extent of destruction is not yet clear, the book is significantly reinsured and we believe our loss estimate is robust. The remaining exposure is mainly in the marine portfolios. Hiscox has a modest share of the marine hull market in Hiscox London Market and in our Re and ILS division, where we write whole account coverage. While we are aware of a small number of vessels trapped within the conflict zone, our average line size is small. We use significant reinsurance on this book, and our net exposure is modest. With regards to the indirect potential exposures, such as cyber, we have not yet witnessed any material impact from the heightened geopolitical tension. Conversely, the cyber book has seen reduced frequency and severity of claims across all business divisions, which is a result of the underwriting actions we have taken and the clampdown on ransomware by governments across the globe. In this period of heightened risk, we are adjusting both our pricing and appetite for cyber exposure across the group. Lastly, on inflation, while economic inflationary pressures continue to increase across our markets, we have various elements of inflation loaded into our loss ratio picks and pricing models, alongside reflecting appropriate indexation in our rated exposures. In March, our Re and ILS business executed a loss portfolio transfer transaction, buying protection for our casualty reinsurance portfolio, which is in runoff. This transaction does not have a material impact on our capital position, but protects $116 million of group reserves from further deterioration. This is in addition to the two other LPTs completed in 2021. In total, 18% of the 2019 and prior year group reserves, mostly longer tail in nature, are now reinsured against future loss performance deterioration, acting as an effective mitigant from inflationary pressures on the back book. So to conclude, I'll now turn to our investment results and share a few thoughts. The first quarter of the year saw a spike in risk-free rates, which resulted in significant but temporary mark-to-market losses in our short-dated government and corporate bond portfolios. So the group booked an investment loss of $120 million in the quarter. While this, of course, is disappointing, it's not a surprise to anybody. As you know, Hiscox applies fair value accounting to our investment portfolio, and we would expect losses from movements in yield curves to reverse over the life of the bonds when held to maturity. It is important to remember that these mark-to-market adjustments are non-cash and non-economic in nature. Under the new IFRS 17 accounting standard, effective from next year, such unrealized losses would be somewhat offset, as changes to discount rates would also be applied to the valuation of our liabilities. For now, on a positive note, the yield on the bond portfolio has increased significantly to 2.4% as at 31st of March 2022, up from 1% at the end of December 2021. The short-dated nature of our portfolio means that increases in risk-free rates lead to improvements to our portfolio yield in short order and much improved prospects for our investment returns from 2023 and beyond. So to conclude, our business has delivered a solid performance in the first quarter. The rate environment continues to be supportive, and both our big ticket and retail businesses deliver good underlying growth in areas where we see the right opportunities. We continue to position the business for attractive and sustainable returns through reducing exposures where we believe risks are underpriced. The group remains strongly capitalized with liquid resources sufficient to pay claims, dividends, and execute our growth strategy. I will now hand over to the operator to open the floor for Q&A.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. Our first question comes from Will Hardcastle of UBS. Will, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Morning, everyone. Two quick ones, I think. First one, can you talk through, I guess, how sustainable you think the better-than-expected ex-cat loss ratios are? I guess, perhaps is this evidence of the pricing and underwriting coming through, or is there a risk that it's simply lower man-made losses resulting in the favourable quarter? And second one, Russia-Ukraine, the $40 million. We've seen a varying degree of what companies are disclosing as a loss estimate at this point and how robust the estimates are and whether that's expected to escalate as the year goes on. I guess, can you try and give us some comfort or as to how robust that estimate is? Is that your ultimate expectation at this point? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Will, for both those questions. So first one, the sustainability of the non-cat experience that we saw in Q1, and then secondly, Russia and Ukraine, and a bit more clarity on what that $40 million loss estimate is. So I'm going to hand both those questions over to Jo Mazzell, our Chief Underwriting Officer.
Thanks, Liz, and morning, Will. So as Liz said, you know, we had a good first quarter where all of our portfolios, in terms of business divisions, had a favourable non-cat. As you know, we've been re-underwriting our portfolios for the last couple of years across the piece. You know, we've exited significant amount of business in our big ticket business, and as obviously as you know, we take a remediation into our US portfolio as well, and that's obviously in addition to significant rate that's been driven across all portfolios over the last 4 years. And so, you know, in terms of how sustainable is it, I think it's as an effect of that. I think the biggest driver that we look at is attritional loss ratio. So, you know, as you know, sort of risk loss ratios or larger claims can come, you know, through the year. But the attritional loss ratio in the portfolio is the sort of main indicator of the health of that portfolio with regard to risk versus rate. And the attritional portfolios are positive across the division, so that's really pleasing. In terms of how sustainable, I think there has been, particularly in casualty lines, I think there has been a view, which is, you know, how, following COVID, has courts returned, you know, has litigation returned to pre-COVID levels, et cetera. And so what we're doing is within our casualty lines and our longer tail lines, we're not taking that favourable experience through our P&L, With regard to our reserving methodology, some of that favourable experience that that we're seeing in terms of the loss ratios, we're actually holding on to indeed until we view it to indeed be favourable rather than noise in the portfolio. I think whilst, how sustainable is it, so I think the markers are the attritional loss ratios are favourable. And again, as the sort of result of the remediation action that we've taken across the portfolios. So with regard to sort of Russia and Ukraine, I think you're, obviously from our point of view, our thoughts first go to those directly impacted. And obviously the other thing that I'd say is, clearly this is a live cat event and an emerging situation we continue to monitor. But with regard to the 40 million, this is our best estimate, our view as the situation stands. Those losses mainly emanate from our war, terror, political violence portfolio, some in marine, all in our big ticket business, predominantly in our London market, and some in our RE and ILS. As Liz mentioned, the losses incurred to date have been minimal. So the vast majority, pretty much nearly all of this, is IBNR. But we believe this to be a robust loss estimate. We have extensive reinsurance in place, and we believe this estimate to be robust. I know that clearly there will be varying ways of which people are reserving this estimate, and we've seen some of that through the reporting season. But from our point of view, it's the best estimate with the event as it stands at the moment.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Will.
The next question is from Andrew Ritchie of Autonomous. Andrew, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for the call. A couple of questions. For Joe, maybe. Joe, could you just remind us, when you talk about rate increases, I'm thinking particularly retail here, which I think you say is 5%, is that excluding the effect of indexation, if you understand what I mean? In other words, that is the rate per unit of risk, and the unit of risk may itself be indexed to inflation. I hope that question makes sense. The other question was, there's been some interplay between Nat Cat reductions in London market versus some growth in reinsurance. Net-net, how would you describe the group's sort of Nat Cat, sort of RDS, PML, however you want to think about it, position changing year on year? Is it net up meaningfully, or is this simply a sort of reallocation from one pot to the other? And the final question, I should probably know the answer to this, having followed you guys for a long time, but when you talk about portfolio yield, the 2.4, is that excluding the roughly 18% of the portfolio, which is in cash and short term, or are you just referring to the fixed income portfolio? And if you are, I mean, presumably that cash and short term, we should be plugging in, I don't know, 50 bps extra return on something or that, or maybe just give us a sense as to what we should think about for that part of the portfolio. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. So I'll take one or two, and then Liz will pick up on three. So you're right. So in terms of our rate increase that we report on retail, that does exclude indexation. So, as you are aware, there are parts of our portfolio that are rated on underwriting exposure, things like our property portfolio that are rated on, say, sums insured. And as those, as inflation affects, cost of materials and rebuild costs, as an example, those underwriting exposures are indeed indexed to take into account of that increased inflation. So in that instance, you'll be applying the same rates, but obviously the underlying exposure, a million rebuilds going to 1.1 million rebuilds, you're generating more premium with the same rate. So the rates we report are indeed excluding indexation. There are other parts of our portfolio that also are rated on underwriting exposure. So again, those rates are excluding indexation. So portfolios that are rated on things like wage roll, as indeed wage roll and turnovers are increased due to inflation, that then is reflected in our underwriting exposures, and our rates are applied to those. So yeah, you're absolutely correct. The rates that we're reporting exclude indexation. Your second question in terms of the sort of Nat Cat reduction on our London market, but our growth in RE, From a high level point of view, our appetite for nat cat risk is broadly flat. You are correct that depending on different parts of the cycle and different markets, we would utilise that cat budget differently, obviously making sure that we're generating the returns that we would expect for that risk. I think it's important to say we've got the same view of risk across both our London market and reinsurance portfolios, but clearly the markets are different, the primary market different to the reinsurance market in terms of obviously conditions and pricing. And at different points in the cycle, you know, at the moment we're reducing our London market cat and increasing our reinsurance. If we look back a couple of years ago, that would have been slightly different in a different rating environment.
Great. Thanks, Jo, and thanks, Andrew, for the three questions. So on the last one, which was the 2.4% reinvestment yield on our portfolio, so that is specific to the bond portfolio, and so you should think about it in this way. In fact, as I stand here today, that's now 2.7%, so we're continuing to see strong momentum in that opportunity as we go forward for 2023. In terms of the cash element of our portfolio, I think a couple of things there. We have been holding quite a lot of cash historically, and as we see the kind of the reinvestment yield opportunity going up, we'll be looking to make sure that we're not holding too much cash to make sure we're not missing out on anything. And we do hold that cash across a number of different currencies as we look to kind of hedge out some of our reserve exposures. So it is a blend of different currencies. So I don't actually have what the yield is on our overall blended cash position, but it would be modest.
Okay, great. Thank you.
No problem.
The next question is from Andreas van Emden from Peel Hunt. Andreas, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. Good morning. I've got two questions, please. Could you maybe discuss the loss portfolio transfer transaction you've completed in March? I see you mentioned that it's sort of neutral for capital, but first of all, does it have a P&L impact at all? And secondly, is there any remaining exposure at Hiscox to the runoff book, or has that been now fully transferred? And maybe finally, on reserving, could you maybe discuss the reserve quality of your casualty book as it now stands in the first quarter and whether there's any step change in reserve release assumptions going forward? Thank you.
Sure, Andreas. I'll take those three questions. So on the first one, yes, we concluded an LPT in the first quarter of 2022. I think that happened actually the day of our year-end announcement that we shared that news with you. So that final LPT that we've done there is for our casualty reinsurance portfolio. And that portfolio was put into runoff back in, I think, 2019, with a bit of drags coming into 2020. And overall, that transaction will be broadly P&L neutral. You won't expect to see any kind of material impact coming through at all in any of our combined ratios for our Re and ILS business. And that LPT covers the entire of that runoff portfolio, so no kind of lingering exposure. And to be quite frank, we're delighted we did it. Timing was perfect, and this is one of the key measures that we're using to protect ourselves against inflation. In terms of remaining exposures, so you recall we did two other LPTs in 2021. The first was for our US broker business, and that covered 2019 years and prior for the US. And so we did buy protection for that. We obviously have continued to write US broker business that's in appetite, and we are continuing to form underwriting action on there. So there is... It's not a runoff portfolio per se, it's still a live book, so that's live exposure. The other LPT we did was for healthcare, also in our reinsurance portfolio. That was a portfolio that was put into runoff, I think, in 2018, and we have no residual exposure to healthcare on a go-forward basis. And then I think your final question was around reserve adequacy and guidance on reserving strength, etc. It's not something I'm going to comment on at Q1. It's a trading update, so I'll just leave that one there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
The next question is from Alan Devlin from Goldman Sachs. Alan, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks, guys. Thanks for the questions. Two questions from me. First of all, on the net investment income, you know, given the size of the move in the portfolio yield to 2.7% currently, how should we think about that going into next year? Should we expect that all to kind of drop to the bottom line in higher investment income? Or given the size of the move, should we expect some of that to be passed on to your customers in terms of being factored into your you and the industry's views on pricing? And then just a second question on your comments on cyber, how you're kind of viewing the cyber market. You talked about lower frequency, lower severity, and governments clamping down on ransomware, but also seems your appetite for cyber is also reducing. Just wonder how you see the cyber market currently, given the dynamics in that market. Thanks.
Sure. So I'll take the first question on investment income, then I'll hand over to Joe for cyber. So firstly, on the net investment income, so 2.7%. Yes, I'm really excited about the opportunity for next year. We will be putting our assets to work and generating that additional yield. Typically speaking, given we are a short tail underwriter, the investment environment isn't something that forms a material component of how we do our pricing. So at the moment, I don't see any kind of significant impact, but obviously everything to be determined in the future. So it's probably all I want to say on investment income. Joe, can I pass you over just on the cyber?
Sure, yeah, and just to follow up on the investment income, obviously we're an underwriting organisation and our role, my role particularly as the CEO, is to make our money from underwriting, and so therefore when we price, we don't take investment income into account. Our pricing is done excluding investment income to generate the returns from an underwriting profit point of view. With regard to cyber, you're right, the cyber market has been, very interesting over the last few years, driven by quite substantial trends within claims, particularly around ransomware. Over the last 18 months, 2 years, we at Hiscox have taken significant action on our underwriting portfolios across all of the portfolios, so that's in our retail and in our big ticket. More generally, we focused our retail portfolios to the smaller end of the cyber customers, and we've refocused our London market insurance portfolio to more of the sort of the excess. We've also done some significant re-rating along with the rest of the market, and also invested heavily in terms of mitigation. So at that small end customer, in retail, we still see the largest driver of loss is not ransomware, but actually human error. So, an employee of one of our customers clicking on a link that they shouldn't, forwarding on, a link, etc. And so we invest heavily in something we call the Cyber Clear Academy, which, is a training for those small customers. So that's, I say, in general, our exposure has come down over the last 12 months as that re-underwriting has taken place across the group, albeit, given the rate in action, we've clearly got far more premium for less exposure. So as we come into the year, we had a view in terms of cyber, a reasonably cautious view. The other thing that we do, we're a significant buyer of reinsurance in our cyber portfolio. Clearly, the Russia-Ukraine event has heightened the cyber risk. We are closely monitoring that situation along with our partners and our experts in this space. Whilst I think we report that we've seen no unusual claim activity in the first quarter, indeed our claim activity is actually reduced for cyber in the first quarter, driven by our own remediation, but also some more global trends with regard to ransomware. However, the situation does still remain heightened, and we've taken some additional portfolio action, particularly in some of the segments that we would think may be more exposed, things like utilities, etc. So yes, whilst the obviously the report that we've said is that the actual claims activity is reduced in the first quarter. I think that the situation is still a heightened situation for cyber.
Cool. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Ian Pearce of Credit Suisse. Ian, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, morning everyone. Thanks for taking my questions. The first one was just on London market growth. Even when we strip out the headwinds from the reduction in property binder, the reduction in cyber, when we look at growth ex that, it looks like there isn't much growth ahead of rates. Just sort of given where your underlying combined ratios are and given the rate momentum you're continuing to see, just wondering why you're not growing the bit of the book that you like ahead of rates. Secondly, just on that property binder book, it sounds like there's still remedial action that needs to be done there. So just how big is that book? And is that something you're still looking at having to take some re-underwriting action on? And then thirdly, just on the US replatforming of the DPD business, if you could just give us an update on sort of how that's going, when you think that should be finalized, and if there's been any impact on things like customer service or customer interaction that's having any headwinds at the moment, or if that's all going to plan. Thanks.
But thanks very much, Ian. I'll take the first question, Joe, and maybe the last, but we'll see how we go. So I guess London market growth and being ahead of rate. So yes, overall we shrank in Q1. We were down 3.1%, and that was predominantly as a consequence of material cutting in our Nat Cat exposed lines in the London market business. And there were another number of areas that we chose to take action in as well, where we have cut back on cyber, as Joe has just described, and then also limited impact from sanctions. So in terms of London market and how we think about that, on a go-forward basis, we do expect that business to return to growth. We continue to see good opportunity there. And in our flood business, we are seeing strong growth momentum. Again, we're also seeing that in D&O. I think the thing that I would focus on for London market, which is somewhat of a different dynamic to that we've had in previous years, is our net written premium growth, which is up 5.5% for the year, significantly ahead of the top line momentum. And what we're choosing to do there is where we see these attractive opportunities, which are a hard won, right? It's not like you can just go and write endless amounts of them. We're finding these great opportunities where we see opportunities, but we're also choosing to keep more of it. So we're buying less reinsurance. And this is helping us to grow our overall exposure in London market to the areas where we deem the greatest opportunity. In terms of action on the Hiscox London market portfolio, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily see that this is just one-off and done remedial action. This is a consequence of us continually looking at all of our portfolios across London market and the big tickets and saying, okay, is the rating environment adequate? And if it's not, we will cut. It's just a natural cycle of what we do in underwriting. So I'm just going to pass over to Jo. So is there anything else you want to add, and perhaps you can answer the USDP.
Thanks, Liz. So yeah, so from a CEO point of view, I'm really happy with where we're growing in London market. As Liz said, we're growing the lines of business where we see good opportunity, and actually we're cutting back where we don't think the rates are adequate. I think, as I mentioned at the year end, you know, with our big ticket portfolio, you know, we're utilising the hard market to ensure that our portfolios are structurally profitable. So structurally profitable through the cycle. I mentioned things like, you know, we're leading more, take more control. We're reducing our binder exposure, again, taking underwriting control, because we're not just thinking about today and the hardening market that we're in. We're thinking about tomorrow and how we have a structural profitable a business through the cycle. And yeah, in terms of, as Liz mentioned, in terms of the binder portfolio, you know, you will have recalled we've been in a remedial action in that portfolio for about 3 years. And, you know, whilst, of course, you know, we thought we've done enough, you know, the view of risk also has increased during that period. And so, therefore, we've taken some more action. It's not linear through the year. The vast majority of it is in Q1, so that will be moderated through the year. But, you know, obviously we're in a cyclical market. We have to make money in the market that's in front of us. And if we don't think we're getting rewarded for that risk, then we'll cut. And then your last question was on the US replatform. So the US has been replatforming for a while. We already have about 100,000 customers on the new platform. And so clearly this is an operational platform, but you know the rest of the platforming will be done predominantly by H2 as we transition through, particularly putting our partners onto the platform. I think you asked, was there any sort of issue in terms of customer service? You know, as we say, we've already got 100,000 customers on the portfolio on the platform, which is which is positive, so we know the platform is operational and works. There's always teething problems with any replatforming, and so you know, obviously we've worked through those, but nothing material, nothing that has had a significant impact in terms of work and customer service.
That's great, thank you.
The next question comes from Ashik Musaddi from Morgan Stanley. Ashik, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good morning, Liz, Joe. One question from my side is, the growth in Re and ILS has been probably the strongest that we have ever seen, 46%. So how should we think about the dynamics of that versus profitability? Because clearly last year and for many years in past as well, the combined ratio in that unit has been like very low. I mean, if there is a normal cat year, I expect the combined ratio on Re and ILS to be very low. So how do we think about that suddenly extra profit? Or I saw that there is a comment in the press release that net premium written increased by only 20% versus a gross of 46%. So can you just explain the dynamics of this significant growth and the profitability, how we should think about it for the year? Thank you.
Sure. So I guess the first comment I'd say on Re and ILS is, as Joe sort of set out at the year end, we've done significant amounts of net portfolio underwriting action over the last few years in Re and ILS. And as we kind of stand there at the end of 2021, we were broadly satisfied with the shape of that portfolio. Now, that doesn't mean it won't change going forward, but broadly satisfied. So what that means is when I come to the gross growth that you're seeing for 2022, that gross growth was predominantly for our ILS platform, which means the risk entirely passes on to them. It's not kept by us, and we drive risk-free income from that portfolio. So it isn't something that will per se impact the loss ratio component of your combined ratio. It's fee income that you're seeing that you would get from that additional premium income. There's a bit of rate in there as well. But that's the kind of the narrative that you're seeing on Re and ILS. We do have a strong pipeline of ILS AUM going forward, but obviously growth on that top line is contingent on that. From a net written premium perspective, you know, you're predominantly seeing the benefits of rate coming through there. There's a bit of reshaping of the portfolio, but again, you will definitely see our net written premium growing at a much slower rate than our top line through 2022.
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
The next question is from Freya Kong from Bank of America. Freya, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. On the repositioning in the US broker channels, is this completely related to the liability exits that you flagged last year, or is there something else? And what's the like-for-like premium base we should be basing our growth forecast on for retail? And secondly, what's your outlook for rates and, I guess, appetite in specialty lines given likely disruption from the war? Thanks.
Okay, so first question was around US broker and the nature of the portfolio actions that we're taking in there and what the kind of the baseline number is when you're doing your growth projections and then outlook on specialty. So broadly speaking, I'll hand both those questions over to Joe, but just in terms of looking at that projected growth rate for our US business. So you can see, I think I include in the press release, what the underlying growth rate of our US business is if you strip out the actions that we've taken on broker, and that's 9.2%. So hopefully that's enough to get you, you know, a clear sounding to do your calculation. So Jo, I'll hand over to you.
Thanks, Liz, and morning, Freya. So yeah, absolutely. The repositioning that we talked about in the US is the repositioning that we've been speaking about for the last 12 months. It is the exiting of those lines. So that was the financial services, it was the standalone GL, and it was the repositioning of our US portfolio to really focus on business with turnovers less than 100 million, which is where we really see the, you know, the long-term opportunity for us in that space. And so it's really the sort of the tail end of that action. Even though we announced it last year in terms of that repositioning and the exiting of over 100 million of business, the way that the US market obviously works is, you know, we have to send conditional renewal notices if we're non-renewing business, and that can take in certain states up to 90 days. And so obviously, you know, and then obviously we've got a 12-month portfolio to work through. So that's why that action wasn't fully completed in 2021, and there's been a hangover into Q1 of this year, and it will finish in the very beginning of Q2. You know, Liz mentioned on the go-forward portfolio, so that go-forward portfolio, you know, the sort of the comparator, the growth rate is about 9.2, and that's about 7.6 for the whole of retail on the go-forward portfolio. Your second question was with regard to sort of Russia, Ukraine, and what will it do to rates. I think it's really too early to assess. I mean, first and foremost, you know, some of these areas that were being affected, sort of terror portfolio, you know, was in a competitive market, rates were slightly declining, and so certainly it's moderated any rate decline. With regard to, you know, how that portfolio responds, obviously we'll see through the year, but, you know, obviously our business is cyclical, and if there are significant losses, which there are reported to be, then, you know, clearly that will find its way through the pricing, through the pricing environment.
The next question comes from Nick Johnson of Numis. Nick, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Two questions, please. Firstly, on retail Europe, just looking at the construct of underlying 12% income growth. I think that's a number. 8% is rate. Just wondering, excluding rate, what is the breakdown of the 4% balance between inflation, indexation, and customer growth? In terms of customer growth in Europe retail, it would be interesting to hear how much or what customer growth numbers or customer numbers have done sequentially from Q4 last year to Q1 this year. Is there anything you can say to give us a feel for that? And then secondly, on catastrophe exposure, I think you said that at a high level, you know, your cat appetite is fairly similar. Can you give any color on sort of what's changed at a geographic and peril level? Just wondering if there's anything significant to call out there. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Nick. So I'll take the first question on giving a bit more clarity on the retail Europe number. Joe, perhaps if you can take the second. So overall, this quarter has been another fantastic quarter for our European business. So growing at 11.7% in constant currency. So really pleased about that. I think the key thing to think about when you're considering that growth is it's not just a consequence of rate. It's also a function of portfolio action across the board book as well. So if I give you a few examples, so in France, we're now seeing double-digit growth, which is absolutely fantastic. It's our second biggest region in the European portfolio, and it has had slower growth over the last few years, and this is a real step up in terms of its growth rates, and that's a consequence of us doing significant portfolio action in that country over the past few years, and now we're taking advantages of the opportunities that we see there. So that's somewhere we're seeing a real growth opportunity. if we then compare that to, say, Germany, which has been a powerhouse of our growth in Europe over a few years, last few years, that's in the top end of single digits at the moment. Now, they have experienced good rates, but that is one of our regions where we have been fairly big on cyber, and we have looked to moderate some of that growth. Joe's spoken about that earlier. And we've also taken some other portfolio action in that portfolio. So looking at rate and looking at growth and seeing how they all kind of add up is probably a bit too simplistic to kind of really see how that's changing. In terms of overall customer growth, Europe has been really strong in adding new customers this quarter. We haven't actually disclosed our customer numbers, but I can share with you that they are up materially for Europe, and they've been driving significant new customer activity in that area. So overall, we are really pleased with our European performance. It's been sort of a standout for Q1.
Thanks, Liz. And so with regards to our NatCat appetite, so as you rightly said, you know, our NatCat appetite is broadly flat. However, you know, clearly we've gone through some of the nuances of where we apply that risk with regard to the different portfolios. You know, our NatCat risk is really a function of our the Hiscox view of risk. We reevaluate that regularly, looking at the sort of evolving nature of the peril. You know, it's will be no surprise for you to say that you know, climate risk has increased over recent years, particularly, you know, some of the secondary perils, things like floods, wildfire, etc. And obviously we update our view of risk you know, regularly, and then we do an appropriate business plan with regard to that that view of risk. So some of the I suppose things to pull out would be, you know, obviously lessons learned from sort of US hurricanes, Japanese typhoons, obviously been built into our view of risk. You know, previous things that we've built in, things like the assignment of benefits or social inflation in our Florida portfolio. And then obviously we implement any sort of, as I mentioned, sort of that climate view of risk. You know, we're continually optimizing the portfolio to build a diverse risk profile reflecting our assessment of the latest view of risk.
Yeah, thank you very much. That's helpful. Thanks both.
Thanks, Nick.
The next question is from Ivan Bokhmat from Barclays. Ivan, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much. I've got a couple of follow-ups, please. The first one is on the inflation question that was a prompt. I'm just wondering if you could just help us understand, maybe provide, if possible, a digit estimate of where you think the claims inflation might be running. Because clearly a few of your larger US peers have been cautioning about some of the small commercial claims inflation. You know, maybe you can suggest by how much you've been indexing those US retail exposures. And the second question would be also a follow-up regarding the US replatforming. And you mentioned new products and new partners. So I was just wondering if you could just talk a little bit about that and perhaps also about the competitive environment in that space, because I think a few of your kind of DPD players perhaps have had issues raising funding this year so far. Maybe any color on that. Thanks.
Sure. So how about I start off with some bit on the US replatforming, and then I'll hand over to Joe just to finish that off with any bit builds, and then you can cover inflation, Joe. So in terms of the US DPD platform, I'll start off with the competitive environment. So I think one of the things that we are first and foremost is an underwriting company that is enabled by technology. And that is definitely the sentiment that we have taken when it's come to building our US DPD platform. And this is a key differentiator to how we've positioned ourselves against some of our peers. So it's very, very easy to grow on US DPD, US small commercial business on a digital platform. You just lower your prices and you can grow spectacularly. We have embedded into that platform our history of underwriting knowledge, of pricing, of market insight, to be able to build a proposition that is both attractive for our partners to work with, gives us sustainable profits, and allows us to really build a business that we can believe in. So yes, I think some of our peers who have been more technology-led in terms of their approach to building out platforms in the US have struggled a little bit. I'm sure they'll catch up at some point in time, but at the moment we feel really good about our proposition there. I guess if I hand over to you now, Jo.
Thanks, Liz.
You can cover off the remainder.
Thank you, Liz. So yeah, so maybe I'll just give you a bit of colour on inflation. Taking this inflation into account is obviously part of our normal planning, pricing, capital cycle. We obviously consider two different forms of inflation: inflation on business that we've yet to write, and then obviously inflation on claims that we are yet to pay. And again, there's many different types of inflation. There's, the inflation that things just cost more tomorrow than they did yesterday, so that's sort of cost inflation. But then there's other types of inflation that we consider, things like social inflation, climate inflation, or indeed any other sort of maybe economic-driven inflation. So that's part of our normal cycle. You asked specifically, what is the inflation assumptions that we take into account? Obviously we're not going to go into detail. What I would say though is, when I did the when we did the loss ratio parameterization for 2022, our inflation assumptions pretty much doubled across the group. So that was roughly our view, and obviously we've updated that view as we've gone through 2022. I think a couple of things in terms of how do we mitigate or how do we deal with inflation. So as you rightly said, a lot of inflation is dealt with actually by our underwriting exposures. So making sure that our underwriting exposures are fair and accurate and reflect current environment. So, if a building is going to cost more to be rebuilt, then clearly we need to reflect that in our sums insured. If indeed companies have higher turnover as wages, again, we rate off those and making sure that those underwriting exposures are fully up to date in our portfolios, because clearly that is what we rate off. Another area that we look at is on our underwriting action, particularly in our big ticket business. If you're writing excess business and clearly there's inflation, you attach sooner, so it's making sure that your attachment points are reflective of the current environment, and of course things like deductibles, excesses, and then rating. Obviously the rates that we've gained significant rates across. I think a key thing to point out, it's obviously very obvious, but it's worth reminding, is when we look at those claim inflation assumptions, obviously that is only applicable to claims, and obviously our rating and our indexation is applicable to the whole portfolio. So if you take a rough rule of thumb, which is that half of your portfolio has claims or the loss ratio, clearly it's not necessarily a direct comparable where you can say, 4% claim inflation and you're only getting 4 or 5% in rate, because obviously the rate and the indexation is applied to the whole portfolio, and obviously the claim inflation is only applied to, in that instance, would be half of the portfolio.
Sorry, may I just follow up on that? In simple terms, can you just compare perhaps this 5 to 8% increases you're seeing in retail to claims inflation? Would you say you're exceeding the trend with the pricing you're getting?
So I think we've probably answered the question fully enough there, so I'm probably going to draw that one to a close.
The final question today is from Kamran Hussain from JP Morgan. Kamran, please go ahead.
Hey, I'll be quick because I know we're at the end of the call. First one's just on kind of retail and kind of growth versus exposure. I mean, all the commentary in the release talks about kind of, mid-single digit rate increases in retail, in the different businesses, constant currency premiums up 4%. Could you maybe just talk a little bit about what's going on and exposure generally in retail? Second question, just a clarification, I think on the Ukraine claims, 40 million is a helpful number to start with. Is there anything that we should worry about in the aviation reinsurance portfolio or any risks from that? And the third one, if there is time, any initial views on the S&P model changes? I know that's a key capital metric that you look at. Any views on that for now? It sounds like S&P might be getting a bit more positive on capital. Thank you.
Sure. So three cheeky questions for the last question. I'll take I'll take the growth one, and I'll quickly cover off the S&P model one. So I shared at year end that we expect the S&P model changes to be favourable for us. Our position hasn't changed, despite the fact that we are a cat writer, and that is an area of the S&P model that we do expect loads to increase. We will benefit from the increased diversification benefits that are coming through in that model, the fact that you can now take in DAC, and we'll get better credit for our margin. So overall, absolutely happy with the S&P piece. Let me turn now to growth. So overall retail growth, yes, so we have been growing exposure in retail. And I think the key thing that I would say is we continue to take portfolio action all the time in our retail book. So when you look at rate and you look at growth, you need to factor in the fact that there is a certain amount of churn that is happening within that book all the time as we tweak and shape our portfolio. So we're seeing really good underlying growth at 7.6% in constant currency. We expect that to, you know, continue to improve through the year as we start to, get back to where we have been on DPD, on US DPD in that 15 to 20% range. And we are adding customers onto the portfolio, and we're feeling really good about that. So it's a nuance. Narrative. We haven't shared any customer numbers with you at this trading update, but you know, as we go through the year, you'll be able to see a bit more of that. And Joe, if I pass over to you now, just to cover off the Ukraine question.
Thanks, Liz. As I said at the beginning, clearly this is a live cat and an emerging event, which one we continue to monitor. You know, the 40 million is our view as it stands of the best estimate of that event. As I mentioned, the losses that we've had reported today are minimal. The vast majority is in IBNR, so we believe that to be, you know, a robust number. You mentioned specifically aviation. Just as a reminder, we exited aviation in London Market in 2018, and we have
it's the reinsurance portfolio. Sorry,
in London Market, we exited the aviation London Market in 2018. Yeah, and in reinsurance, we just have a modest follow share sort of whole account coverage, including in some cases aviation hull, and a very small standalone portfolio. As I said, the number of the 40 million is our best estimate of the event as it stands.
Thanks, Jay.
Great. Thank you very much, everybody, and joining our call today.
Thanks, everybody.